always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Wednesday's edition, Happy Hump Day's edition of the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show here at 4:06 in the p.m. Central Daylight Time, June 12th, 2024. To kick off the program, we have something that is not typical, but is also not unknown of. We've got some breaking news.
Breaking news on News Talk STL.
Where'd you dig that up from, Joey? Where'd that come from?
Jim Modgen is under the console here, and I just kick him. And then he's got a little band that plays the little horns and the piano and the trumpets. Thank you, Jim.
He starts talking.
Go back to bed.
Producer Joey V on the wheels of steel. Chris Harp's here with me as well.
Yes.
Chris, the House, the U.S. House, the big House, has voted in an historic fashion to hold Merrick Garland, the Attorney General of the United States of America, in contempt and to refer him for criminal charges to his own DOJ. Now, we know where those charges will be going. They'll be going into File 13, but I like the fact that Republicans made a point here, and it was for a refusal. They probably could have done this over a number of things. They chose to hold him in contempt for not turning over the Herr Biden audio tapes.
Yeah, and this is the second time that we've seen this, actually. President Barack Obama's Attorney General was held under contempt of court for the gun-running scheme that the FBI was running into Mexico. We know that those weapons ended up in the hands of criminals and killing innocent people. So Republican Congress once again needs to send this message to a White House and to a Democratic Attorney General that you are not above the law and that Congress has legitimate constitutional oversight over your office.
With a very slim majority, I know some special elections were recently held, and I think the Republicans got back a seat or two, but it's still a very slim majority. The Republicans hung together instead of hanging apart for once, yeah. And they all held Merrick Garland in contempt. I believe this was a party line vote. The DOJ will, of course, not act upon this because we live in a banana republic now, but it's an important message to send to voters. Merrick Garland has targeted parents for attending school board meetings. He's targeted Christians for daring to protest at abortion clinics, and he seems to be hell-bent on prosecuting Joe Biden's number one political opponent, and that would be Donald Trump.
Yeah. The Barack Obama Attorney General at the time was Eric Holder. He was held in contempt as well. And I think this just shows this case with the president and these tapes. This is just a simple flouting of the law or Congress's oversight and transparency. Look, what is wrong with the public, specifically Congress, hearing the tapes of the president testifying before a grand jury? What is they keep telling us? Well, we have the transcripts. That's enough. Well, that's not enough.
Especially if they're all redacted.
Especially if they're all redacted, and especially if the prosecutor said the reason why he didn't prosecute the president because he was very forgetful and seemed like he'd be a sympathetic witness on the stand. Well, let's hear that. Let's hear the tapes of the president having gaps of memory and not remembering when he was vice president, not remembering when his son dies. This is clear interference of Attorney General trying to protect the President of the United States, not being the people's lawyer, but being Joe Biden's personal lawyer in this case.
And as you imply, let's let the American people decide. Why shouldn't the American people? This is the Republicans often don't get something as simple as this handed to them. I'm glad they didn't boof the football. This is a very understandable situation, as you point out. All this is about releasing the audio tapes of the transcript. And if the transcript is already out there, which it has been for some time, what is the harm in releasing the audio tape version of that? If the reason was that Joe Biden couldn't stand trial was because of his mental capacity, as Herr said, Why shouldn't the American people get to hear that and make the decision for themselves?
Yeah, and Merrick Garland is painting this as the Republicans using this as a political stunt to try to embarrass the president, that there is no need for these tapes to be released. As I said, you have the transcript. What else do you need? This is a political circus that the Republicans are putting on. And I don't think that will fly with the American people, especially when we saw at the White House in the Juneteenth celebration, the president freezing for 7 or 8 minutes to say that the president is fine behind the scenes and is running everything and is in command, and then you won't let us hear him testifying behind closed doors, mm-hmm. kind of heightens the suspicion that people have. So the White House has a real PR problem right now with this, in my opinion.
Yeah, so we're supposed to believe that Joe Biden is a mental genius. He's an Einstein and an Edison behind closed doors. But for some reason, he likes to be a bumbling buffoon in front of the cameras. None of that makes any sense. Doesn't pass the smell test. This will be this is now the second high-ranking cabinet official that has been held in contempt by Congress, the first one being Alejandro Mayorkas. And we can say that that was definitely not political, because reality would object to that, because once again, yesterday, Chris, 8 ISIS-linked suspected terrorists made it across our southern border, were walking around freely in the United States of America. They finally apprehended them after they had originally been vetted by the CBP.
Yeah, and these weren't people from South America or Central America. They were from Kazakhstan, of all places, which is halfway across the world. For them to end up in America, that's a deliberate decision, a deliberate thing that was taken for them to get here. Kazakhstan, of course, an area that is known for terrorism, is known for a place where ISIS and other groups train to commit terrorist attacks. For these people to be in the United States is very frightening. I am glad that our government did the monitoring, did what they did to catch these people, and we were very lucky. But as the phrase that we always have heard since 9/11, it only takes one incident to make a difference, even if you stop the other 99.
Mm-hmm. Very true indeed. Well, thank goodness we've got a legal expert, a legal eagle, to discuss both of those issues and so much more. Zach Smith, senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, co-host of the SCOTUS 101 podcast, and most importantly, one of our two featured guests who's joining us for the Saving America event, Saving America 2024, the economy and the courts. That will be Tuesday, June 25th. My goodness, that is only 13 days away.
13 days.
We are less than 2 weeks from this event. Have you got your tickets yet? You need to get your tickets. They're free. NewstalkSTL.com is where you can get them. They are free. We want you to be with us, but we have to have you have a seat reserved. So please jump on NewstalkSTL.com, reserve a seat to see the fellow we're going to speak with at 425, Zach Smith, senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. The other thing, Chris, that we'll want to discuss with Zach are the hand downs from the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has about, 3 weeks left in its term. The hand downs are going to start coming fast and furious. I'm hearing that the Mifepristone case, that decision could come down either this week or next. And so we got lots to discuss with Zach at 425. We then have,
go for it.
Chris's Corner at 4:45.
Yeah, headlines and more 2024 presidential news that you may have missed.
507 Speaker Stump Speech: Biden inflation continues to gut the middle class, as fully intended by D.C. Democrats and Joe Biden. I've got the proof. It's in the pudding. The interest rate update was provided today, along with I won't even have time to get through this list. It's a long list of things that you and I and all of us buy every single day, every single week. You will be blown away at the staggering increase to everyday items. Inflation overall may be down since Joe Biden caused it to ratchet up, but inflation is a series of compounded elements. And so unless inflation reverses and deflates, then those things continue to go up year over year. And we are definitely feeling pain at the pump and the grocery store. At 525, we'll get an update on the Missouri governor's race from one of the three top leading candidates, Senator Bill Eigel. He's from right here in the county of St. Charles. He's a outgoing state senator at the end of this year. He's running for governor. We'll talk to him about his race and the other things that are going on the Missouri legislative level. And then at 5:45, Chris has got everything you need to know about Larry Connors USA and what's coming up on his program and more. That will be on our final. That's not a throwaway segment. Chris always has lots of stuff to make sure that we get through at 5:45, so make sure you listen to the entirety of the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show this afternoon. It's a jam-packed one.
And look, one of the things we got to talk about here early, the big statewide news, especially as you as director of the Freedom Caucus, I definitely want to hear your views on this. And Bill Igel at 5:24, the governor announcing today that he is going to slash some of the items in the budget that was sent to him. Tim, I think I'm going to go out on a limb here, but I'm going to, and precedent has been set, that some of those items that may be slashed out of the budget may be items that Freedom Caucus members may be advocating for or push for. Your thoughts as Freedom Director on the governor's announcement today?
So the budget that was passed was one that was largely crafted by Freedom Caucus member House Budget Chairman Cody Smith. It was $2 billion below what the governor originally wanted. So I think it's interesting that the governor is now going to cut a budget that is $2 billion below the budget he presented. So he suddenly has become a fiscal hawk. Mm. I welcome him to Reaganism. So I don't know. I don't know what specifics he's going to go after, but I imagine, yes, he will probably target anything and everything that is even at all connected to Freedom Caucus members. Chris, there was an interesting primary in South Carolina yesterday, and there is a Freedom Caucus in South Carolina, and the South Carolina swamp targeted the Freedom Caucus members there with over $2.3 million in spending against them. Every single Freedom Caucus member in the South Carolina legislature was reelected, and they believe they're going to add to their ranks.
I know there are two Freedom Caucuses that are in the ire of the leadership there. I know South Carolina is one. I think one of the Freedom Caucus members is running for Congress or ran against an incumbent congressman. And I think also in South Dakota or up north, I think there is they call it a renegade Freedom Caucus that's kind of in the ire of leadership that is taking on establishment and making definite news and waves.
Yeah, 11 Freedom Caucuses around the country, and the leader of the Freedom Caucus, Andy Roth, who used to be with the Club for Growth, has said that he wants to expand Freedom Caucuses into all 50 states. So, yeah, we're still having primaries. That's an interesting note, right? We're still having primaries for the year, and Missouri still has a primary. It is August the 6th. I know many of you have vacations planned. You get distracted during the summertime. I'm telling you, you can't wait till November to decide if you're choosing the right Republican for office. There are very important primaries all up and down the ballot. Everything from state committee people, county committee people, all the way up to U.S. Senate. Josh Hawley is up for can you believe it's been 6 years since Josh Hawley got elected?
Crazy.
Josh Hawley. So we have everything from U.S. Senate down to many important local races as well, with statewide races, senatorial races, representative races, all in between. Very busy August 6th primary, just around the bend.
Yeah, and you talk about those primaries yesterday, Tim. This is from Politico. Trump-endorsed candidates easily won their primaries Tuesday, led by South Carolina Representative Nancy Mace. There was a lot of talk that she may be in trouble. She held off two challengers and got 57% of the vote. Pastor Mark Burns secured a runoff slot in the state's open seat, and Representative William Timmons, who Trump endorsed the day before the primary, edged a conservative opponent by 4 points. In North Dakota, Julie Fedorchak won the nomination for the state's sole House seat. In Maine, State Representative Austin Theriault won easily. And in Nevada, Trump-backed veteran Sam Brown for Senate, he won and sailed, according to this article, past 11 other candidates. So Trump-backed candidates did very well last night in North Dakota, Maine, and in South Carolina.
Chris, got some more breaking news. Just came across the wires, and you'll be very happy to hear this, as am I. Leah Thomas, the dude swimmer who's trying to be a woman swimmer, he has lost his challenge to swimming rule banning males from female events. Therefore, he will not be able to swim in the women's swimming events for the Olympic trials in the Paris Olympics that are set to begin this Saturday.
And I'm glad the United States Olympic team did that, but I thought I read something earlier that the International Olympic Committee banned transgenders in sports. So even if He would have been allowed to compete in the trials. He wouldn't have been able to compete in the Olympics. Thank God there's still some sanity left in the world here.
And how bizarre is it that Europe seems to be figuring this out faster than the United States, right? They're starting to reverse course in the UK. I'm so glad that the Olympic Committee, which I'm sure the Olympic Committee is not populated with a lot of conservatives, but maybe they have enough people there that believe in reality and sanity. Yeah.
You know, I had a couple of thoughts yesterday regarding the whole transgender, transsexual issue and everything. And I started really thinking about what is this really all about? And I started thinking, I said, you know, I really do believe that, you know, this is my Christian belief, my Christian judgment. I really do believe that people that are homosexuals that engage in same-sex lifestyles, I think they inwardly know that their lifestyle or what they're doing is wrong. And so they look for justification on that lifestyle. And so what the leaders of the LGBTQ movement, they try to scrub the lines between what is sexuality. If there's no boy, if there's no girl, if you can be all these different sexes and all that, then what difference does it make if you have sexual relations with this person or whatever, when all of the lines between sexuality and gender are blurred? It makes it, hey, how are you going to condemn me for same-sex marriage? There's no for same-sex relationship. There's no such thing as same sexes. There's hundreds of sexes. And I really think that is the bottom line with this. It's demonic. And unfortunately, you have the useful idiots that are like, oh, it's love. Let them do it. It's love. We should love everybody. And that's all fine, but they don't know that they're basically being used as useful idiots for the people that are really pushing this agenda, are trying to blur the lines of sexuality so there can be no more judgment on their actions that they take, sexual actions that they take. And I really believe that's what it's really all about.
Well, and the left and the media, and they do that not just for that situation, they do it for, by eradicating the meaning of words, whether it's regarding this bizarre trans cult that we've been experiencing, whether it's ESG, whether it's CRT, DEI, if they can tell you that things don't mean what they actually do, then they can deploy this lunacy a lot easier, right?
Exactly.
It's a lot easier to deploy when the words mean whatever you want them to mean and you change them on a daily basis, then there is no objective truth.
Yeah. And then they try, and then it's so sneaky and it's so subtle, because even though you and I and everyone of the half common sense know the transgender and all of that is absolutely craziness and ridiculous, but they get you to the point that if you question it or you say anything derogatory about it, you're the one that has the issue and you're the one that's not operating in love and acceptance and everything.
You're homophobic.
And all that.
And you know what they do with immigration? Chris, if there's no such thing as an illegal alien, if they're an undocumented migrant, then to the left, in the leftist mind, there's nothing illegal about that.
Exactly.
So there's nothing wrong with a wide open southern border. There's a lot of things wrong with a wide open southern border. No matter if you call them illegal aliens or the man in the moon, it doesn't matter what term, but see, you're right. They'll change the words on that so they can say, well, they're undocumented migrants, so there's nothing illegal about that.
Exactly.
So they should be able to. There's a lot of things wrong with that, but you're right. They do it subtly. It went from illegal alien when you and I were growing up, not that long ago, to illegal immigrant, to undocumented immigrant, to now undocumented migrant.
Yeah.
Or what do they say in the
economic migrants? They call them
economic migrants, and they do it in the lead, and they do it in the justice system too. Justice impacted individual is what we're supposed to call a convicted felon now. They do it with everything, and it's to make us not accept the reality of the situation.
Yeah. As I said, just a recap. If you can blur gender, if you can blur sexuality, then you can't condemn a behavior if the predetermined norms of sexuality are blurred and they're no more. Then how can you condemn what we're doing?
And then if you oppose them, you're a racist, sexist, misogynist, misanthrope.
Yeah,
yep.
Exactly.
Hey, 4:24 in the PM, we're going to bring in Zach Smith. He's going to set us straight on all these legal matters involving Merrick Garland's contempt motion being upheld by the U.S. House. They have held him in contempt. We'll ask him about the aftermath of the Hunter Biden trial, the hand downs from the Supreme Court. We got a lot to get to. We'll get to it next on the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show. 101.9/94.1 News Talk, STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
It's Loving Day, marking 57 years since the landmark Supreme Court decision legalizing interracial marriage in our country. Back in 1958, police stormed into the Virginia home of Richard and Mildred Loving. They were arrested and convicted, all for being married to each other because Richard was a white man and Mildred a Black and Native American woman. And on June 12, 1967, the court unanimously struck down Virginia's ban on interracial marriage, overturning the Loving's conviction and legalizing interracial marriage across the country.
4:32, and welcome home on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. As you heard there, the 57th anniversary of the Loving's case. I guess Becky and I should go out and have a steak dinner and celebrate that court.
Pop the champagne.
Victory allowed us to get married. Our next guest is going to be in town June 25th at the St. Charles Funny Bone. He is going to be at our Saving America 2024 event, The Economy and the Courts. We have him on the line.
Oh, it's all
Zach Smith, legal fellow with the Heritage Foundation.
You know, I ask you a lot of predictions. Can you predict what the Supreme Court probably will do with this action? Zach, welcome into the show. Just how excited are you about coming to St. Louis on June 25th?
I am very excited about coming to St. Louis on June 25th. And I'm looking forward to seeing you guys and all the other great folks that work at the station on that date.
Well, we look forward to having you and Joel Griffith. You can get your tickets at Newstalk STL. They are free, but we do need a count. Zach, I want to talk about the Supreme Court here. First of all, the court is running out of time, and there are a lot of decisions that still need to be made. And then I want to talk about a little bit about Justice Alito and just the attacks, the relentless attacks that have been on him lately. We heard yesterday that he was secretly recorded and saying just controversial things like our country needs to be a place of godliness and compromise between the left and right is probably not possible. Zach, talk about this unprecedented attack on the court. Not to mention you have decisions being leaked out by court clerks. What is the court permanently damaged?
Well, look, I think this is a concerted effort by those on the left who are trying to undermine the legitimacy of the court because, frankly, now they realize there are no longer majority of justices who will reliably implement their preferred policy solutions. The majority of justices now are committed in some form or fashion to being good textualists or originalists, even though they may not always be as hardcore in those pursuits as some of us would like. But look, it's interesting to me that many of these attacks have focused specifically on Justice Alito, like you mentioned, Chris, and then also on Justice Clarence Thomas, two of the court's most conservative members. We've seen news story after news story about Justice Alito and the flags his wife flies outside of his homes. We've seen stories about Justice Thomas trying to imply that somehow he hasn't appropriately disclosed the gifts he's received or other benefits he's received in terms of teaching arrangements, gifts from friends, those sorts of things. And so this is certainly a coordinated effort by a few far left groups, prominent among them, a group called Fix the Court. But there are others as well that are simply trying to bully Justice Thomas, Justice Alito, and other conservatives to either resign or to not implement their preferred policies. Now, fortunately, if you've ever met Justice Thomas or Justice Alito, yes. I don't think they're easily intimidated, but that's certainly the goal.
Mm. Zach, how about the breaking news we just all learned of? The contempt motion against Merrick Garland, the Attorney General of the United States of America, was upheld by the House of Representatives. Zach, the charge was brought, the contempt charge was brought based upon the fact that Merrick Garland would not release the audio tape of the transcript of the interchange between Special Counsel Herr and Joe Biden. Zach, how do you unpack all of this? Was it appropriate or not for Merrick Garland to withhold that transcript, and did it rise to the level of a contemptible charge?
Well, look, I think it certainly raises very real questions about why he wouldn't release the transcript. I think it doesn't do Joe Biden or anyone in his administration any favors. I think many people are going to assume the worst, that it obviously did not make Joe Biden look very good if the DOJ is not going to release that transcript. And obviously, a majority of the members of the House of Representatives thought that this was a contempt-worthy thing for Merrick Garland to do. Now, in terms of where this will go, I doubt much, if anything, will come of it, unfortunately, because it, at the end of the day, is up to the DOJ to prosecute contempt proceedings in Congress. But I think it does stand in stark contrast to what we've seen from Peter Navarro, who's currently incarcerated for contempt of Congress for not responding to a subpoena he received. And then also Steve Bannon, who is also going to need to report to jail shortly for contempt of Congress for not responding to a subpoena he received either. And so when you compare Merrick Garland's actions to the actions of Peter Navarro, Steve Bannon, and the differing treatment they're likely to receive, I think once again it plays into the narrative that we've been talking about so much, that there appears to be, if not the reality of, a two-tiered system of justice, where if you're part of the favored group of people or individuals from the left or the Biden administration, you can do what you want and not experience any repercussions. Whereas if you're on the right or you oppose the agenda of the far left, then you will be targeted and the full weight of the law, even using novel legal theories, will be used against you.
Speaking with Zach Smith, senior legal fellow of the Heritage Foundation and co-host of the SCOTUS 101 podcast. Zach, I want you to comment on this case about the X Corporation, formerly Twitter, has asked the Supreme Court to review the process that led to Jack Smith obtaining Trump's Twitter files. Can you talk about that?
I haven't looked at that closely, Chris, but it doesn't surprise me. You know, there's a big debate in the tech sector right now in terms of what information the government is entitled to receive and how they are entitled to receive it. There's a question over whether some information can be given to the government or required to be given to the government by a simple subpoena, like a grand jury subpoena during an investigation, or whether the government would need a warrant to receive some of that information. You may remember there was a case from several years ago, the Carpenter case, that involved cell site location data and a question of whether the government would need a subpoena or would need a heightened showing to get a warrant to get an individual cell site location data, even though that information was kept by a third party, which traditionally is an exception to the warrant requirement. In that case, the court said you would need a warrant because the information is so, there's so much information, it's so personal, that this is the type of information that a warrant is designed to protect against abuses from the government obtaining it. And so I suspect those same types of issues will be at play in this case by X and others as well that Google, Facebook, Apple, other tech companies are facing as well right now.
Zach, certain members and former members of the U.S. federal government apparently did protest too much as to Hunter Biden's infamous laptop being nothing more than Russian disinformation. Because, Zach, one thing that we learned, one key thing that we learned in the just concluded Hunter Biden trial where he was found guilty of all charges was that the government decided to use that as a key piece of evidence. So now, Zach, I guess the government itself is admitting that the laptop is real and it has been authenticated. Zach, could this potentially portend to cause additional further problems for the Biden family down the road in some of their other legal machinations that they're involved in?
Well, I certainly don't think it's going to do them any favors, Tim, particularly if you look at the information that's contained in there. It's just absolutely paints Hunter in a terrible, terrible light, not to mention on the during the course of his gun trial in Delaware this past week, we learned that he gave crack cocaine to his brother's widow, Haley Biden, who he was dating for a period of time, introduced her to that drug, which he said led to a very dark period in her life, as well as the other damaging pictures and information that came out during that trial. But look, I think the gun case that just occurred in Delaware was a fairly open and shut case. The only question was whether there was essentially going to be jury nullification. Would the jury fail to acquit Hunter, either because of who the Bidens are, especially there in the state of Delaware are because they potentially felt sorry for him as a drug addict. And of course, neither of those things happened. The jury, I think, appropriately responded to the evidence and convicted Hunter on all of the counts. What will be interesting to watch is what happens in September in his tax trial in Los Angeles, yes. Assuming that still goes forward. I think you're more likely to see some of the information about the business dealings, some of the, you know, kind of untoward associations Hunter had with foreign nationals. That sort of thing may be more likely to come out at that trial. But even at that trial, I think it's important to keep in mind that the only reason we have the gun trial that just went or this tax trial that's set to go is because a judge rejected the sweetheart plea deal that the Biden DOJ initially tried to give Hunter to get all of these charges to go away. And even then, because David Weiss, the special counsel in this case, dragged his feet for so long, the statute of limitations expired on many of the most serious charges that potentially could have been the most politically damaging to Joe Biden and his other associates.
Zach, we know that the elections are going to be very close this November with the House and the Senate in the balance, especially the House. The Supreme Court rejected South Carolina's new congressional map, or rejected a challenge, excuse me, to South Carolina's new map by 6-3 recently. And then Louisiana will have two black majority districts this fall election. We've been talking about this, it seems like, for the last year and a half about these two cases. Can you break it down for us?
Yeah, so the Alabama case, Merrill versus Milligan, that you mentioned, essentially a district court in Alabama took a view of what the Voting Act's right requires to say that Alabama would have to draw a second majority and minority district in Alabama. Now, the state of Alabama and several other states as well took issue with that. They said the district court got the voting rights analysis incorrect. But more importantly, they said that if the district court's analysis stood, it would essentially require states to explicitly consider race to the exclusion of many other factors. And that seems anathema to our colorblind constitution and also to the Supreme Court's recent decisions in the Harvard and UNC cases as well. And the state was very clear that the Voting Rights Act, as initially was enacted, was designed to make sure that black individuals and other minority individuals weren't being prohibited from casting a ballot. It wasn't designed to essentially require the state to, again, try to pick winners and losers in elections based on race or who they thought particular races might vote for. And Justice Clarence Thomas wrote a very good decision in that South Carolina case, a concurring decision, where he explicitly called on the Supreme Court to revisit a lot of its voting rights jurisprudence, a lot of its prior case law, as being potentially incompatible with the concept of a colorblind constitution. Now, there are other challenges being teed up right now. There's a very interesting case out of North Dakota involving districting, particularly around several tribes and reservation land in North Dakota, how that fits into the Voting Rights Act. And the Supreme Court just called for the views of the Solicitor General, which is a very good indication at least some of the justices are interested in taking up that case, which could end up being a watershed case in terms of interpreting what the Voting Act, what the Voting Rights Act case requires when states redistrict.
We have been speaking with Zach Smith, Senior Legal Fellow of the Heritage Foundation and co-host of the SCOTUS 101 podcast. You can hear more of his wisdom along with Joel Griffith this June 25th at the St. Charles Funny Bone, Streets of St. Charles, Are Saving America 2024, The Economy and the Courts. Get your tickets today. News Talk STL, they are free, but it will fill up fast. Trust me. Zach, thank you so much for your time, sir. Look forward to speaking with you again next week and seeing you on the 25th.
Of course. Looking forward to it. Always great to talk with you guys.
Thank you, sir. And coming up, Chris's Corner, we'll give you a little update on the 2024 election. Some polls come out and some more bad news for Joe Biden, especially for Kamala Harris. You'll hear that next on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
After the verdict, CBS News' Weisha Zhang spoke to one of the jurors who asked to remain anonymous.
We treated it just like we would any other case. It wasn't about Hunter Biden. It wasn't about his family. It wasn't politically motivated. It was what he did. The biggest thing that he did was lied about not being a drug addict and not using cocaine and buying a gun.
President Biden, scrambling his schedule last minute to be with his son, released his own statement, reiterating that he will accept the outcome of the case, vowing to respect the process as Hunter considers an appeal.
Welcome home on the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show, 451. And as you heard there, of course, Hunter Biden, the president's son, the first family member of a president ever, first son to ever be convicted of a crime. Of course, we won't hear that too often from the mainstream media, but we will hear that President Trump is the first former president to be convicted of a crime. When it rains for the president, when it pours, it is raining. Let's get into that mayhem on Chris's Corner.
Chris.
And if you don't know, now you know.
And now, Chris's Corner.
President's son is convicted on three felonies. And then today, Attorney General Merrick Garland was held in contempt of Congress for his decision to withhold recordings of Biden's interviews. We know this isn't going to go anywhere, but I think this is just one story that's not going to go away, because the most basic person that doesn't follow politics very closely can see that there is something amiss here, that why can't we just hear the president in his own voice answer these questions. I don't think they're going to be able to get away with that, but we shall see. You know, according to 538, which is kind of the gold standard for polls, they take amalgamation of all of them, President Biden's approval rating is at an all-time low, Tim. His approval rating reached a low of 37.4%.
Wow.
That's lower than President Trump at his lowest rate. I think Donald Trump was at 39%. Mm-hmm. You remember we kept hearing over and over and over how low Donald Trump's approval rating is. We barely ever hear it about Joe Biden. He is lower than the former president, which is should be getting a lot of attention. You know, a lot of people are worried that if Joe Biden is not the nominee in November, the Democrats especially, that Kamala Harris may be the nominee. That's one of the reasons many, and I am one, believe that's why President Biden is holding on, and because they know that Kamala Harris cannot win. A political morning consult poll reveals that only a third of voters think it's likely VP Kamala Harris would win an election were she to become the Democratic nominee. Only one third of voters,
wow,
three of five Democrats, believe she would also prevail. A quarter of independents think she would win. Harris is at a 42% favorable rating, 52% unfavorable. So she's almost right there with the president. She's 3 points ahead of the president of the United States with 39%, 42% approval. More polls here. Donald Trump is trying to compete in Minnesota. He barely lost Minnesota in 2016. Lost it a little bit more in 2020, but not bad for a Republican. A New Star Tribune NPR News Care 11 Minnesota poll finds Biden narrowly leading Trump 45-41 in Minnesota, which is probably very close to the margin of error. Robert F. Kennedy pulls 6% of the vote up there in Minnesota. And a Quinnipiac poll of voters in Georgia found that they agree with Trump's conviction by a 50-44 margin, which is very interesting. But the rest of this shows that but support for Trump over Biden is at 49-44. So Georgia voters agree with the conviction, but they still support Donald Trump over Joe Biden, a 49-44 margin. We know that illegal immigration is killing this presidency. That's why the president has done a complete 180 and now has decided to issue executive orders and enforce the border. We know part of this is because governors in Texas and Florida sent their illegals up to these so-called sanctuary cities like in New York, Chicago, and Denver. And once those cities had to deal with the crisis, it's funny how the tune changed all of a sudden. We've got a report from the Free Market Common Sense Institute Institute found that the city of Denver, local school districts, and regional healthcare systems have spent between $216 million and $340 million to shelter, feed, clothe, and educate the migrants and to provide them with emergency medical care. That's $324 billion in the Denver metro area. We know that the costs in New York City alone are upwards of $1 billion. For cities, you're talking real money here, you know, and you hear a lot of these mayors, you know, they don't talk about cleaning up the border. They just want more money to be able to house these people so they or either move them somewhere else. And one hidden thing that's really, really surprising here, Teamsters President Sean O'Brien has held out on endorsing President Joe Biden or Donald Trump, and he has asked to speak at both parties' conventions this summer. That is Teamsters President Sean O'Brien. So just more evidence that the Democrats' hold on the blue-collar white worker is slipping away. That is Chris's Corner. 507, Tim, speaker stump speech.
Talk about the fact, Chris, that with the release of the new inflationary numbers today and the Fed's decision to do nothing regarding interest rates, Bidenflation continues to bust the middle class.
And at 524, we'll speak with Bill Eigel, Senator from Missouri District 23, and also governor candidate. We'll talk to him at 524, listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.